also the name of a nightclub founded in 1980 by Marion Coleman. Until its closing 9 years later, the club also acted as a sort of hub for Houston's gay and lesbian community, hosting organizational meetings, fundraisers, theatrical presentations, and even blood drives as the AIDS crisis emerged. Nancy Ford will be joining us to discuss the history and significance of the Kindred Spirits annual summer dance. Then in News Wrap, the countdown to the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell has begun, and that discriminatory policy will officially end on September 20th. However, the LGBT Log Cabin Republicans are continuing their lawsuit against the policy just to confirm its unconstitutionality. If there was such a thing as a gay agenda, then the next item would be hearings conducted this week by the Senate Judiciary Committee on a bill to overturn DOMA, the so-called Defense of Marriage Act. And a think tank is forecasting big bucks for New York State in LGBT weddings, now that those weddings are legal. In our feature segment from This Way Out, a closer look at the Senate hearings on the repeal of DOMA. And then at 10 o'clock, J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage focuses tonight on the band Wicked Lady. In the late 1970s, in Europe, they were one of the first out-of-the-closet all-lesbian rock bands. The band's founder, Sue Exley, shares their story and music in an exclusive interview. Jack.
Yes, well, and this week we have a couple big things coming up. One is Q-Fest.
Q-Fest starts on Thursday.
And, of course, we also have the dedication of the park.
That is also on Thursday.
On Thursday at 8 p.m.
8 p.m., 1,000 block of California Street.
Yes, I'll be there.
I'll be there, too.
So those are very important events that are coming up in the community. And, you know, it's really good to know what's going on. Outsmart's a good source of knowing what's going on in the community. We try to keep you up to date, but we're not necessarily a calendar. So maybe one of these days that will be solved. But and, of course, you go also go to the community center because they list a number of things, the GLBT Community Center here in Houston. So it's coming up, and of course KPFT will be raising money again, as we do, well, it seems like every time
fundraising time again
around the corner, and it's important because it does cost money to keep us alive, keep us non-commercial. We don't even get grants from corporations like some other stations do that are non-commercial. So please keep us in mind when we ask for some money in the later part of this month. So we're going to be going right to our Kindred Spirits interview right after this.
from an Icelandic artist named Jonsi that was Animal Arithmetic, released last year on the album Go. This is Queer Voices.
Well, we have less of Nancy Ford with us tonight.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Looking ever so radiant.
You know,
you guys, this is radio.
Yes, but you want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, sure. I guess you're alluding to the weight loss that I've undergone in the last year. And thank you for noticing one thing, for one thing. Yeah, I guess everybody's known. I was not figuring I was going to talk about this. Oh, this is funny.
We got you here.
We got you here.
You got me.
We locked the door.
You're so funny. Yeah, in the last year, I've lost 80 pounds.
Fabulous.
And congratulations. And the big secret is you eat right and exercise more. I'm going to market it, so don't tell anybody.
And
that's
you do
the
that
secret.
As working in the publishing and the magazine business.
No, that's a good way to pack on the 80
exactly.
pounds, you know, in front of the computer all day and then in front of the television all night. But yeah, I feel so much better, and everyone's been so supportive. And actually, if you want to hear more about it, I will be speaking about this very thing to the women's group at the Unitarian Church on Sunday, September 18th. So, and you didn't even know I was doing that. You didn't know I was,
no.
I would even, could even turn that into
mark
a plug.
That down on your calendar, September 18th.
Like Larry King, he doesn't know anything about the guests he talks to. So,
Seattle, are you there?
You're here to talk about Kindred Spirit. But before we do that, I do want to know a little bit about Pittsburgh.
Oh, Pittsburgh was so much fun. Well, as you know, I grew up just about an hour from there in Ohio. And this was the first time I went back to the Pride celebration this year for the first time, Pittsburgh Pride. And what a wonderful time. It's about a quarter the size of our celebration. But they have grown like 700% in the last 8 years. So they're just doing great. So they were very hospitable. They had a flash mob in the square at one point, you know, to kick off the festivities, and just a great festival, like we do. And it was really fun to go back to my little corner of the world and see what has transpired in the 30 years since I've gone, because let me tell you what, honeys, it wasn't like that when I was still living in that region.
Oh, and I'm from the opposite side, the northeastern part of Pennsylvania, and I understand that they have some type of picnic around Pride, too. Now, I've never been to it, and where mm-hmm. I was growing up, of course, there was never even a concept of that.
Oh, certainly
and
not.
This is much, you know, Scranton-Wilkes-Barre is much, much smaller area. But that's good to know. It's good to know that Pride is springing up all over the country and actually all over the world.
Even in Pittsburgh. And you could actually breathe in Pittsburgh mm-hmm. now, unlike when I was
yes.
growing up. So,
yes.
Just a beautiful city. They were very hospitable. But, you know, like Judy Garland said in The Wizard of Oz, there's no place like home. But, of course, where is that now for me? Is that here? I guess it's here.
It's
of
here.
Course it's here.
Where your
Thank
heart
you.
Is, of course.
Thank you.
So you got involved. Kindred Spirits was a bar.
Mm-hmm.
It was a women's
In the
80s. Bar,
mm-hmm.
And it was a very popular bar, and it was a very clean.
It was a community center
community
as much
center.
As it was a bar. Yeah, politicians met there to plan campaigns. Many, many meetings for the first facsimile of the community center met there. Theatrical productions, blood drives. And it was, yes, a bar, but it was safe. It was well lit. It was a place where we could celebrate and not have to hide. And that was really integral for that period of time.
Yes, especially that period of time.
In the 80s, it was open before AIDS hit and through the 80s. So it became, you know, such a focal point, not only for the women, but for the men, too. Oh, excuse me, I'm out of breath.
And Marion Coleman.
And Marion Coleman was the originator, the founder, the owner of Kindred Spirits, the bar. And now she is our president for Kindred Spirits, the foundation. The spirit of Kindred Spirits, the bar, lives on through the foundation. And we have several events throughout the course of the year. And now, July 30th, this very Saturday, is our big annual dance, our big summer dance. And last year, 1,000 people came through our doors to celebrate the 30th anniversary since Kindred Spirits had opened. Now it's 31 years.
How many of those people do you think actually remember
Oh, many. And that's one of the things that's so much fun about the evening. We'll see women and men, but couples or single people that, you haven't seen in perhaps 20, 30 years. And they'll come in and you'll see them striking up conversations with the younger women, with our younger guests, who certainly perhaps weren't even born at the time of Kindred Spirits. So it's a wonderful way to pass on the legacy that Marion started 31 years ago. And we also raise money for the community. Sisters, Lesbian Health Initiative Houston, LHI, sure. And also, okay, let me get this right, Express Nutrition, which used to be Houston Buyers Club.
Oh, okay.
Now it's called Express Nutrition, and their Ellen's Hand program is something the Kindred Spirits
Now, as your job at Outsmart, mm-hmm. you just see a lot of the stuff come through the door of organizations.
Do I?
Things. Yes.
More than you yes, I do, know. Honey.
And probably mostly at the last minute. Why did you pick Kindred Spirits to work on, to be involved?
Me personally?
Yes.
What an interesting question. Well, when I first moved to Houston from the Pittsburgh area, I was scoping out different cities, and I was visiting Houston, visiting my girlfriend at the time. It worked out so well. And it just happened to be February 14th, Valentine's weekend of 1980. It was the first day that Kindred Spirits opened.
Really?
Oh, really? Yes, it just happened to be that day that I had flown into town for the weekend. And, of course, we went there with some friends of hers. And being from Ohio, I mean, you know, I'd never seen more than maybe a softball team full of, nine lesbians at the same time. And the doors at Kindred Spirits swung open, and there were, I don't know, 300, 400, it seemed like a million lesbians to me, just all dancing and celebrating together. And I knew that this was where I had to be. So I moved here, and continued my association with Kindred Spirits as a customer, but then I also performed there. Did an early version of the Dyke Show at Kindred Spirits. In fact, it was the very first gay bar that I ever worked at. So I have a very a strong heart cord to Kindred Spirits and to Marion Coleman, and you can really see that tradition continuing. Thank you so much for asking me about that.
Well, there's usually like about 30 gay bars and two lesbian bars, you know, in most cities, and now it's even more.
If
fun.
You do it right, that's all you need. Sometimes. Yeah, it is. And you know, women's bars, there was a lull there for a while. I drove past up a walkrest there between Chances and Mary's just today and saw the backhoe at it, just pulling down our history. I just, oh my goodness. And then I remembered a few of the times that I'd had there. It's probably best that they're being torn down at this point.
Destroying
the evidence. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I'm... Yes. Anyway, so it seems like some of our legacy is changing. You know, it's gone. It's changing. But we have new bars. We have Evo, which is downtown on 2M, which is a real fun bar for lesbians, and also The Usual, which is a great place for music and kind of an ice house kind of place. And that's in the Heights. And I feel like your information source for the lesbian community. What else do you want to know? I don't know.
Well, but
Kindred Spirits is continuing that legacy. Or actually, I guess it started and now we're trying to continue it. Excuse me for.
So, what other events do you do throughout the year?
Well, our next event after this one is our softball tournament, and that's going to be in October, and it's going to be on National Coming Out Day weekend. That Saturday, it's going to be in Memorial Park, and we're also encouraging you to come out and enjoy the softball game. We'll have refreshments, and it's going to be a great family atmosphere, so bring your kids, bring a picnic if you want. I don't know what they say about dogs. I don't know. Yeah, I can't imagine lesbians being outside and not bringing their dogs. So bring the dogs! Bring the kids. Just come out. It's going to be a great time. And I think that's October 8th. I should have checked that. But and then in December, it's the fifth annual Judy Garland Christmas sing-along. I think it's the fifth year we're doing it now. At Meteor, and that's the first Sunday in December, and
okay.
That's always a
now, all of this is available on a website?
It's all on our website. Thanks for asking about that. KindredSpiritsHouston.org.
Okay.
And find us on Facebook.
So, you have events going around, going on year-round, and how many on your board? Approximately?
Approximately, is it 10, 12 women? Dedicated, strong, beautiful women.
So you get together and you discuss what you're going to do, or is it sort of like in the motion now that you do these events every year?
You know, let's say that we try to make it look easy. How's that?
Good for you.
How's that?
I know
we try
exactly
to make
where you're coming
it look
from.
Easy.
Yes.
Yes. In fact, I just came from a board meeting tonight, and we're very, very excited about the event this year. And we only have one $500 table left for sale in terms of the reserved seating. So if anybody wants that $500 table, get yourself to KindredSpiritsHouston.org and purchase that. We also have general admission seats available tickets available. I think for 20 on the website and 25 at the door.
Exactly what is this event? What is it? You
what
say it's a reunion.
Well, it's a reunion. It's a celebration. We have cookies. We have dancing. Joy De La O is our DJ, again, for the second year. Very popular DJ in our community, as you know. And she's also a member of Bunnies on the Bayou. And we're having a little special ceremony with Bunnies on the Bayou this year. They've been very good to Kindred Spirits this year and our charities. So we're going to recognize them. So please come out for that. And what else? The raffle. I almost forgot the raffle. My goodness. We have a 32-inch Sony LCD TV, an iPad, iPod,
something
iPod.
Like
it's,
iPad.
It starts
what
with an
size
I.
Is it?
It's a medium size.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's an iPad, too, with the Wi-Fi and the...
All the good stuff.
The woohoo and
all
the,
right.
You know, all that. And a Kindle. And a couple of wine baskets so you can get a good drunk on while you're working on your Facebook. I've got a Facebook page now.
Oh, good for you.
I know.
Good for you.
I know. That screaming you hear is me being dragged into the 21st century. I know. I got a Facebook page.
We all have to do that eventually.
I know. Well, you do, Miss Almost City Council Person. Am I allowed to say that on air?
Probably not,
probably
but that's
not.
Okay. This and I'll have to step up behind the microphone in 6 weeks.
Very exciting.
Yeah. So, where, when, what time?
Oh, yeah, Kindred Spirits. I'm sorry. I'm just sitting here chatting with you like we're you know, old friends, which we are.
We are.
It is this Saturday. It starts at, okay, I've got my flyer here.
There you go.
It starts at 7 o'clock. It's at the SPJST Lodge at 1435 Beale Street. That's the SPJST Lodge. It's the bingo hall there. You might know it more readily like that. Or I remember SPJST as Some People Just Suck Today.
Okay.
It works for me. It's one of those exercises. $20 before the dance, $25 at the door. We'll have cookies and goldfish and drinks and dancing with Joy De La O, and it all helps out the women's charities. And come say hello to Marion Coleman and me too.
And the whole gang.
And give me a hug.
Okay.
Dance with me.
Okay. So what's coming up in Outsmart? Can you tell us anything?
No.
No? Okay.
It's our big music issue.
Oh.
Yes. It's going to be great fun. I can tell you what I'm talking about. I got to interview Paige Lewis, who is a local musician, singer,
right,
songwriter,
yes,
here. Fabulous performer. And also I talked to a woman from Sick of Sarah, which is one of the groups that's going to be playing at Rock the Plaza on August 27th.
Oh, yes.
Benefiting the Rose and LHI.
Okay. So one more time, what is the website for the Kindred Spirits?
KindredSpiritsHouston.org.
And Nancy Ford's join us. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Thanks.
I must admit, I find it unbelievable that in the year 2011, There is still a need to hold hearings and debate whether or not a human being should be able to marry the one they love.
DOMA denies these couples the rights and benefits.
I would think that the study, when it cites nuclear families, would mean a family headed by a husband and wife.
It doesn't.
This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Don't Ask, Final Countdown begins. Ghana government urged to hunt homosexuals, and U.S. Senate committee hears how to respect marriage. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael Laveau.
And I'm Ben Caron.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 23rd, 2011. Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The U.S. military policy banning service by openly gay and lesbian people will be history on September 20th, 2011. Repeal of the ban was certified on July 22nd by newly installed Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, who replaced the retired Robert Gates, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Admiral Michael Mullen, and President Barack Obama. The certification was required by Congress in legislation passed in December to repeal the policy. It confirms that the armed forces' implementation of the repeal, quoting Panetta, will not affect military readiness, military effectiveness, unit cohesion, and recruiting and retention of the armed forces. The trio's actions initiated a 60-day countdown, the legislatively mandated waiting period following certification, until the policy becomes history. President Obama, who promised repeal during his campaign in 2008, said in a statement that, "I want to thank all our men and women in uniform, including those who are gay or lesbian, for their professionalism and patriotism during this transition," and called the U.S. Armed Forces a reflection of the values of justice and equality that define us as Americans.
Enforcement of Don't Ask, Don't Tell against active duty troops had already been halted by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The LGBT advocacy group Log Cabin Republicans has pressed its lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of the policy, which the Department of Justice has continued to defend. In court filings submitted on what turned out to be the evening before certification, the group argued that, even with repeal, the trial court ruling declaring Don't Ask, Don't Tell unconstitutional should not be vacated. Because individuals who were discharged during the 17 years that statute has been in effect continue to this day to sustain identifiable collateral consequences from their unconstitutional discharges, Log Cabin attorney Dan Woods wrote, "A substantial controversy continues to exist between the parties that will not be removed by repeal."
Service Members Legal Defense Network Executive Director Aubrey Sarvis applauded the certification, but warned that it is critical that gay and lesbian service members have the same avenues for recourse as their straight counterparts when it comes to harassment and discrimination. Service Members United Executive Director Alexander Nicholson called certification nothing short of historic. This is the final nail in the coffin for the discriminatory, outdated, and harmful Don't Ask, Don't Tell law. And OutServe, the Association of Actively Serving LGBT Military Personnel, also hailed the announcement. "In 60 days, my life and the lives of thousands of other gay and lesbian troops changes," its pseudonymed co-director said. "I cannot be more proud to be able to serve during this time."
The next target on the fabled gay agenda is the repeal of DOMA, the so-called Defense of Marriage Act. Enacted in 1996, it forbids federal government recognition of same-gender couples, even those who have legally married in jurisdictions that allow it. That includes six U.S. states and the District of Columbia. An initial legislative step toward repeal came on July 20th with Senate hearings on the Respect for Marriage Act, which would effectively overturn DOMA, and for which the White House had formally announced its support the day before. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Democrat Patrick Leahy of Vermont said that the law goes well beyond the harm to a family's dignity, harming it in economic and other ways, including legal protections for a couple's children. The testifying witnesses included Executive Director Evan Wolfson of Freedom to Marry, Human Rights Campaign President Joe Solmanes, and 77-year-old Californian Ron Wallen, who was forced to sell his home after the death of his husband. marriage equality opponents were represented by Austin Nimocks of the Alliance Defense Fund, Ed Whalen of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and Thomas Minery of Focus on the Family. The bill's Senate sponsor, Democrat Dianne Feinstein of California, vowed to press for repeal however long it takes and that we will achieve it. That probably won't happen as long as Republicans control at least one House of Congress.
In other news, Christian and Muslim religious leaders in Ghana held separate press conferences this week to condemn homosexuality in the West African country. The Christian Council of Ghana called private, consensual adult same-gender sex unnatural and ungodly, and a detestable and abominable act. The Coalition of Muslim Community of Ghana called it a demonic practice that spreads infectious diseases and threatens procreation. Echoing a draconian proposal in Uganda that calls for the execution of gays in some circumstances, Ghanaian MP David Tete wrote recently that lesbians and gays are treading on dangerous grounds and could face lynching in the future. And Ghana's Western Region Minister Paul Evans Adu ordered the Bureau of National Investigations and all security agencies this week to arrest anyone suspected of engaging gay sex. He also called on landlords and tenants to provide reliable information that will lead to prosecutions and convictions. Adu told reporters that all efforts are being made to get rid of these people in the society.
But there's been progress of sorts for LGBT people in Jamaica. A senior police commander told a TV news program earlier this month that young gay men were the most frequent perpetrators of national lottery scams. But in a surprising move, Jamaica's top cop, Commissioner Owen Ellington, publicly criticized his subordinate, expressing regret for any concern, anxiety, and any appearance of unfair labeling which may have been construed. He insisted that Jamaica's police force has no policy of singling out any particular social grouping for special police attention. Any official disavowal of homophobia is rare in conservative and heavily Christian Jamaica. It's thought to be the most anti-gay nation in the Caribbean, if not the world. Private consensual adult gay sex is a crime punishable by up to 10 years in prison, and homophobia-inciting rhetoric by political figures and popular dancehall musicians are routine, as are violent assaults against anyone perceived to be gay or lesbian.
In other apparent progress, Lithuania's parliament has banned discrimination based on sexual orientation in advertising. The move was a turnaround from earlier drafts of the same bill, which would have outlawed gay or lesbian subject matter in advertising. The new language says that advertising and audiovisual commercial communications must not publish information that humiliates human dignity or discriminates or encourages discrimination based on sexual orientation. The European Parliament's Intergroup on LGBT Rights applauded the development, but said Intergroup co-president Ricky Lunacek, "We remain concerned that the law on the protection of minors from the detrimental effects of public information is still in place. The Detrimental Effects Law, which took effect in March 2010, bans information that denigrates family values, promotes sexual relationships, or encourages a non-heterosexual concept of marriage and family when it could be accessed by a minor, such as in magazines and libraries, on posters or billboards, and online." Amnesty International said that law promotes censorship and called it an anachronism in the European Union. It also appears to be in conflict with the new advertising law.
Elsewhere, India's health minister, Ghulam Nabi Azad, has come under fire for a speech he gave in early July at a national HIV/AIDS conference, during which he said that, "Unfortunately, in the world and in our country also, this disease has come where men have sex with each other, which is totally unnatural." Emily Gray, Amnesty International's researcher on sexual orientation and gender identity, charged that these outrageous remarks linking consensual sexual activity to a disease simply encourages discrimination. Calcutta's Telegraph newspaper called Azad's remarks backward and ignorant, and said that he had tainted the image of an aspiring superpower on the international stage.
But on the eve of the first marriages of gay and lesbian couples on July 24th in New York, California's Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law predicted that same-gender couples will spend more than $150 million on their weddings during the first year it's offered in the Empire State. The Institute, a think tank devoted to sexual orientation and public policy issues, says its estimate is based on the experience of the five previous states that have enacted marriage equality and on new Census 2010 data for New York released just last week. Given the larger population size of New York and the fact that it is one of the nation's top domestic tourism markets, the Institute's analysis concludes, New York will experience a wedding spending boom that is greater than all five of the states that have previously extended marriage to same-sex couples combined.
Meanwhile, couples in Massachusetts are reminding New York newlyweds that their push for equal rights doesn't end with the ability to get married in the state. The Defense of Marriage Act denies them more than 1,000 federal benefits, including joint tax returns, health plans for spouses, and access to spouses' federal pensions. For example, a Boston gay couple that married in Massachusetts in 2006 told the Associated Press that they were paying a penalty tax for just being who we are. They said they must pay an extra $1,000 a year in federal taxes because they have to file separate returns.
But finally, in what's believed to be a municipal first in the U.S., Cambridge, Massachusetts, has started paying quarterly stipends to its married gay and lesbian employees. They offset the federal tax each worker must pay on the value of the spousal health benefits the city gives them, which can amount to as much as $3,000 a year. City officials said that about $33,000 annually would cover the stipend for 22 city and school department workers and their spouses. Health benefits for heterosexual spouses aren't taxable. Cambridge Mayor David Marr, who came out as a gay man at a pride lunch last year, said that this action is the right and fair thing to do until the federal government addresses these issues.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 23rd, 2011. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Ben Caron.
We'll enter the U.S. Senate hearing chambers to listen in to the respectful defense of LGBT families after we meet the first environmentalist.
Environmentalist Rachel Carson, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Rachel Carson was born in Pennsylvania in 1907. Starting her career as a writer, she became a marine biologist, culminating in her 1962 book, Silent Spring. With its stark warnings about the dangers of DDT and other chemical pesticides on the food chain, it helped ignite the environmentalist movement. Carson was by this time a national celebrity, having written two other books about marine life. But her third was the charm, prompting the federal government to take measures against water and air pollution and turning everyday Americans into ecologists. In 1953, Carson began an intimate relationship with Dorothy Freeman. They spent summers together for the rest of Carson's life, and when apart, kept in touch with letters. They eventually destroyed hundreds of letters, so the intensity of their bond would forever be a closely guarded secret. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Janice Brown.
So you don't want to miss a week of This Way Out's global news or great music by openly LGBT artists, hearing about a new movie even before the buzz begins, getting on-scene coverage of important news as it's happening, or queer historic sounds from our archives? The answer is a subscription to This Way Out. You can get our programs on great-sounding CDs delivered right into your mailbox and for less than a newspaper subscription. For easy how-to information, simply email TWORadio@AOL.com. You can also write to us for more information at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
The President has long called for a legislative repeal of the so-called Defense of Marriage Act. He is proud to support the Respect for Marriage Act, introduced by Senator Feinstein and Congressman Nadler, which would take DOMA off the books once and for all. This legislation would uphold the principle that the federal government should not deny gay and lesbian couples the same rights and legal protections as straight couples.
That was White House spokesman Shin Inouye describing President Barack Obama's continuing evolution on marriage equality during a press briefing on July 19th. That was the day before the Senate held its first hearing on a bill to repeal the 1996 law that bans federal recognition of gay and lesbian couples, even those who have legally wed where it is sanctioned. Marriage equality is the law in the states of Connecticut, Iowa, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New York, and Vermont, as well as the District of Columbia. 41 U.S. states have their own versions of DOMA, either as legal statutes or codified in their constitutions. In defending the Defense of Marriage Act during this week's testimony, supporters tended to repeat the same arguments used when the bill was enacted 15 years ago. Matt Laszlo covered the July 20th Senate hearings for Free Speech Radio News.
California resident Ron Wallen and his partner of 55 years were married in 2008. 4 months ago, Wallen's partner Tom died of leukemia.
Since Tom died on March 8th, I miss him terribly. And beyond the emptiness caused by the loss of a man I've spent my entire adult life with, my life has been thrown into financial turmoil because of DOMA.
DOMA is the acronym for the Defense of Marriage Act, which passed through Congress and was signed into law in 1996. While allowing individual states to recognize same-sex marriages, the law also defines marriage federally as between a man and a woman. Thus, same-sex couples are denied the federal privileges tied to marriage. As Wallen told the committee, if he was married to a woman, he would have received Tom's Social Security benefits.
But DOMA says that gay and lesbian married couples cannot get that same treatment. Therefore, my reliable income went from $3,050 down to $900 a month. The monthly mortgage on my home is $2,078. You don't have to be an accountant to see that from the day Tom passed, I have had to worry about how to pay that mortgage.
California Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein also explained other benefits that gay and lesbian couples are cut off from because of DOMA.
DOMA denies these couples the rights and benefits to file joint federal income taxes, to claim certain deductions, to receive spousal benefits under Social Security, to take unpaid leave.
At the time DOMA passed, both Democrats and Republicans supported the measure. But New York Democratic Congressperson Gerald Nadler says that was a different era.
When Congress passed DOMA in 1996, it was not yet possible for a gay or lesbian couple to marry anywhere in the world. 15 years later, much has changed. Six states and the District of Columbia now include gay and lesbian couples in their state marriage laws. And there are an estimated 80,000 gay and lesbian couples married legally in this country.
The Senate Judiciary Committee is now considering the Respect for Marriage Act, which would repeal DOMA. Many conservative groups still support DOMA. Thomas Minery of Focus on the Family told the committee that he represents religious conservatives who fear repealing the measure would have bad consequences.
I feel like I'm also representing parents who have not been invited here to speak, who have a sincerely held religious view that marriage is between one man and one woman, and they want to protect their young children against other views.
In the Republican-controlled House, there also remains a lot of opposition to repealing DOMA. Iowa Republican Congressperson Steve King testified that same-sex marriage is unnatural.
We must oppose any effort that would diminish the definition of marriage. All of human experience points to one committed relationship between a man and a woman as the core building block to society. It takes a man and a woman to have children, and children are necessary for the next generation. And we need to provide to them, pass through to them, the values of our civilization and the family. The U.S. Supreme Court affirmed this in 1888.
Democrats say quoting an 1888 ruling on marriage is ridiculous. Georgia Democratic Congressperson John Lewis says even debating the rights of same-sex couples is demeaning.
I must admit, I find it unbelievable that in the year 2011, there is still a need to hold hearings and debate whether or not a human being should be able to marry the one they love.
Lewis is a 1960s-era civil rights leader. He recounted to the committee how growing up in Alabama, he was forced to drink out of different water fountains than white people.
As a child, I tasted the bitter fruits of racism and discrimination, and I did not like it. And in 1996, when Congress passed the Defense of Marriage Act, the taste of that old bitter fruit filled my mouth once again.
Observers say the effort to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act is picking up support nationwide and slowly gaining support in the Senate. But Republicans control the U.S. House, and most analysts say they're unlikely to repeal DOMA. Matt Laszlo, FSRN, Washington.
In one of the key engagements between the committee and DOMA supporters, Senator Al Franken of Minnesota questioned the testimony of Focus on the Family's Thomas Minery.
Mr. Minery, on page 8 of your written testimony, you write, quote, children living in their own married biological or adoptive mothers with their own married biological and or adoptive mothers and fathers were generally healthier and happier, had better access to health care, less likely to suffer mild or severe emotional problems, did better in school, were protected from physical, emotional, and sexual abuse, and almost never live in poverty compared with children in any other family form. You cite a Department of Health and Human Services study that I have right here from December 2010 to support this conclusion. I checked the study out. And I would like to enter it into the record, if I may.
Objection's ordered.
And it actually doesn't say what you said it says. It says that nuclear families, not opposite-sex married families, are associated with those positive outcomes. Isn't it true, Mr. Minery, that a married same-sex couple that has had or adopted kids would fall under the definition of a nuclear family in the study that you cite?
I would think that the study, when it cites nuclear families, would mean a family headed by a husband and wife.
It doesn't. The study defines a nuclear family as one or more children living with two parents who are married to one another and are each biological or adoptive parents to all the children in the family. And I frankly don't really know how we can trust the rest of your testimony if you are reading studies these ways.
The lead author of that study confirmed Senator Franken's interpretation the following day. On his MSNBC program, The Last Word, news commentator Lawrence O'Donnell discussed the testimony with Jennifer Chrysler, executive director of the Family Equality Council.
Jennifer, with testimony like that, being up against forces like that, you start to wonder, will any facts matter at all in this debate among the opponents of marriage equality?
You know, I think the good news is what's going to matter in this debate is that there are millions of loving same-sex couples raising kids like my spouse and I are and worried about all the things that go into parenting, like hugs and homework and bedtime and bath time. And that reality has penetrated the American public. We are seeing it with the president standing up and saying that DOMA is wrong and anti-family. We're seeing it in New York, where this weekend hundreds of loving couples are going to make that commitment to one another and their families. And it doesn't change the fact that the opposition is going to continue to use these misinformation campaigns to try to persuade the rest of the people on what is, frankly, a losing battle for them.
Jennifer, I want to show you one more moment from the hearing. This involved Chairman Patrick Leahy making a point about this.
If you have parents legally married under the laws of the state, one set of parents are entitled to certain financial benefits for their children. The other set of parents are denied those same financial benefits for their children. Are not those children, at least in that aspect of finances, are not those children of the second family, are they not at a disadvantage? Yes or no?
It would be yes, and as you asked the question narrowly, Senator.
That, Jennifer, that's one of the issues that the opponents tried to evade, is they try to pretend that civil unions or the various other kinds of arrangements are actually the same, and there are no advantages to the children that would come from legal marriage equality.
Yeah, well, the reality is that it's not the same. And the truth is that DOMA only does one thing, and that is harm families, harm children, and harm the kids who really need the safety nets and the benefits that come with legal recognition when their parents are able to be married. And, you know, not only are there the benefits and the rights and the responsibilities that the government confers, but there's the stigma and the symbolic trauma that our kids face. every single day when they hear this anti-family rhetoric from the opposition. And the truth is DOMA is anti-family, doesn't do anything but harm my family, and it does nothing to make the American family stronger today.
Jennifer, tell us how you address or deal with your sense of the stigma that children might be picking up within your own family.
You know, the truth is, you know, I have twin sons, Tim and Tom, and they are 9 years old, and they have understood from a very early age how much alike our family is to other families. They know that we, you know, participate in the same kinds of traditions. We take them to church. We worry about them getting to school. We participate in our communities, and they know that there are politicians and people on the other side who would like to tear their family apart, who would deny them the security of mine and my spouse's relationship. And it is a very real fear and concern that they grapple with, and we have to reassure them all the time, you know, that our family is strong, that we share the same love and commitment that other families do, and that, in fact, the American public is changing, and the president has said clearly that this is a bad law, and that Congress today is showing the American public the truth about our families.
Executive Director of the Family Equality Council, Jennifer Crisler, thank you very much for sharing your story with us tonight.
Thank you.
Democrat Dianne Feinstein of California is the Senate sponsor of DOMA repeal. She said she hoped that the current tally of 27 co-sponsors of her bill would grow, but Feinstein also acknowledged how unlikely passage of repeal will be during this legislative session in the conservative Republican-dominated House of Representatives. She expressed confidence that DOMA will eventually be overturned, however long it takes, either by the increasingly skeptical courts or by legislation. New York Democrat Gerald Nadler is the lead sponsor of repeal in the House. He said the public attitudes have shifted sharply since the Defense of Marriage Act was enacted. Three-quarters of the public opposed opening marriage to lesbian and gay couples at that time. Nadler noted that several recent polls show that a small plurality now supports it, including a majority of Republicans under the age of 45. So it seems that the question is not whether DOMA will become history, like the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy will in less than 60 days. The question for DOMA repeal is when. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, Ben Caron, and Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Janice Brown contributed program material. Thanks also to Matt Laszlo and Free Speech Radio News, and to Steve Pride. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and our generous listeners. Thank you. Find out more at thiswayout.org, where you can listen to our podcasts and link to our blog and our Facebook fan page. You can also hear This Way Out on iTunes. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening on WGOTLP Gainesville, Florida, WPSU University Park, Pennsylvania, 2YOU Tamworth, New South Wales, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.
Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
I'll share with you the secret. No one is a real man at all. Pinocchio, you are a boy. Doesn't take no fairy blue, much less a therapist, three doctors, and one night. Catch all flesh and make you real. You are as real as dreams come true. Tired of tracing one straight line back to our lives. let's crack up this shield they call boy and girl. See what pretty stones that it lights. Kinda like this shield, there is more to us than ever possibly could meet the eye. Think I've found a way to make it through. I'll let you in, I've got a tip or two. We get together, organize, it's true. We got a lot of work to do. Pinocchio, you are a boy. Doesn't take no fairy blue. Much less a therapist, three doctors and one knife. To catch your flesh and make you real. You are as real as dreams come true. Tired of tracing one straight line back to our lives. Not particularly interested in being eligible for its own sake. I have been eligible to most everyone. Relative to that, manhood is cake. Feels much better to be seen each day. Sometimes it's hard to keep the wolves at bay. Hey, forget who you were yesterday. Come out with all the boys to play. Pinocchio, you are a boy. Doesn't take no fairy blue. Much less a therapist, three doctors and one night. Catch up the flesh and make you real. You are as real as dreams come true. Tired of tracing one straight line back to our lives. I'll share with you the secret. No one is a real man at all.
Jerry Falwell's favorite deacon scampered up the aisle at church, sporting lavender pajamas and a matching purple purse. With a triangle tiara and the cutest little hop, Tinky Winky made him do it. Even God can't make him stop. So now Jerry's on to Tinky with his soft and supple ways. How he captivates the children and recruits them all as gays. How he undermines their virtue, all that's manly, strong, and straight. Tinky Winky's tempting toddlers, and they're going for the bait. Do you think that Tink's the Antichrist, the Winky Viet Cong, with his decadent accessories and tantalizing song? You beat the same old drum, Jerry, you stir the same old pot. Tinky Winky must be banned. Tinky Winky should be shot. Ah, but Tinky's hard to find out on a cold Wyoming night, where two losers cruise the bar scene and they're spoiling for a fight. But they do find Matthew Shepard, and he's small, alone, and gay. It's 2-1. They got a gun. They're taking him away. You know what happens next, Jerry. You know, and you know why. They left him hanging on a fence to bleed and freeze and die. The word is father to the deed you can't undo. No, it wasn't Tinky Winky, Jerry. Maybe it was you. For the word may shine like lightning, but the thunder sounds like hate. If they came to get you, Jerry, would you care that they were straight? If you're holed up in the bathroom, would you finally understand why the policeman at the door has got a broomstick in his hand? Tinky Winky may be boring, Tinky Winky may be quaint, Tinky Winky may be holy and be canonized a saint. Tinky Winky may be dumb, Cherry, but when push comes to shove, Tinky Winky will not hate you, no matter who you love. I was scanning your old sermons, and in one of them I read, is it true? Is it loving? Does it need to be said? That's three strikes and you're out. Jerry, it's time to scrap the speech. Take a tip from Tinky Winky and practice what you preach. Why don't you practice what you preach?
Hi, I'm Joseph Mitchell from the Sharpstown High School Broadcaster Program. KPFT's own Pacifica Radio Archives is asking for KPFT listeners to help with an urgent preservation project. The archives are looking for copies of historical KPFT folio program guides.
The Fabulous Internet Archives have agreed to donate scanning and online access services to Pacifica, and now is our shot to save the KPFT history.
If you have folios, mail them here to the station. Drop them off or send them to the Pacifica Radio Archives in Los Angeles. Go to PacificaRadioArchives.org to get the address.
Soon, our history will be available for the world to access. I'm Sam Gonzalez from the Sharpstown High School Broadcasting Program.
This is KPFT Houston.
KPFT is pleased to announce new programming. Now with an HD radio receiver, you can get KPFT's great music, news, and public affairs with a richer, crisper sound on HD1. On KPFT HD2, listen to Rice University Radio with the unique programming that made KTRU a gem on the dial. On KPFT HD3, you'll hear your favorites in new time slots, including Democracy Now!, Al Jazeera English, Uprising, Explorations, Alternative Radio, and more. HD Radio allows you to hear multiple programs through additional digital channels. The sound is crisper than FM, and your choices are expanded. Visit kpft.org to learn more about HD Radio broadcasting and program schedules. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1, and now alternative programming on HD 2 and 3. KPFT, Houston.
Many companies will match gifts made to nonprofit organizations. A matching gift from your company will help KPFT preserve independent music, arts, news, and views for generations to enjoy. Participating in your company's matching gift program is as easy as 1, 2, 3. Step 1, make a gift to KPFT. Pledge today at kpft.org. Step 2, contact your human resources office for eligibility requirements and to obtain a matching gift form. Many companies match the gifts of retirees, spouses, and surviving spouses. Step 3, fill out the employee portion of the form completely. Send the form to KPFT, Attention Matching Gifts, 419 Lovett, Houston, Texas, 77006. Your gift to KPFT could double if your company has a matching gift program. Help out your community radio station today. This is KPFT Houston.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
This way.
Girls love girls and boys love boys. It doesn't matter.
That song is Girls Love Girls, and it's from 1979 by an all-lesbian band out of the Netherlands called Wicked Lady. And the song just knocks me out. And you'll hear it all later as part of an interview with the founder of the group. This is J.D. Doyle with Queer Music Heritage, and this is one of the shows I love to do. I call it my Songs I've Been Meaning to Play show. It's where I share with you some of the treasures I've collected that just have not fit into other shows. Before I get to the band Wicked Lady, I want to go back to the early 70s for another all-woman band called The Deadly Nightshade. They were one of the first all-female bands where the members played their own instruments. The group consisted of Helen Hook, Ann Bowen, and Pamela Brandt, and they began playing together around 1968 under the band name Ariel. They garnered some major label attention then, but in those days, they could just not get signed, as female acts were not considered marketable. That band lasted a short time, but around 1972, they revived themselves under the Deadly Nightshade name. By 1975, they had built up enough of a following where they were able to record two albums for a subsidiary label of RCA called Phantom. The albums were called The Deadly Nightshade and F&W. On the release of the first album, their label released to radio stations only a promotional interview album, which is very cool. It's 26 minutes of them talking between song clips, and I'm going to give you the first few minutes of it. Notice how they define themselves as a band. They were many years away from being out of the closet and were not going for any lesbian identity as a band, or even a female identity. To them, they were just a band. The radio interview starts out with Keep on the Sunny Side, and then goes into one of their main songs, High Flying Woman.
Nightshade. And that's a poisonous flower. It's also a band. I play the bass. My name is Pam Brandt.
I play rhythm guitar and percussion. My name is Ann Bowen.
And I play electric guitar and electric violin. And my name is Helen Hook.
Probably you guessed, we're all women.
Right off the bat, it's very easy to tell.
That's right.
Well, it's real easy to tell if you see us live, and that's sort of what we're used to doing. What usually happens when people see us live is they just sit around and watch us the first, 10 or 12 songs, 8 or 10 songs, whatever it is, and then a lot of things become real clear to them. But one of the questions that that people ask us right off when they get to talk to us in between sets is, what is it like to be a woman and be in a band?
More women play than used to, which is nice. We travel around a lot. That's one of the things that you do when you're in a band. And we have played a lot of jobs with a lot of other bands who are also women. And we run into people at work all the time who come up and say to us that they're playing. And that's real nice. That's a real change, I think, and it's a good thing that that's happening.
And we think of ourselves not so much as we certainly don't think of ourselves as an all-girl band. We don't feel ourselves as an all-women's band or an all-female band or an all-vegetarian band or an all-Republican band or anything like that. We're just a regular old band like all the other bands, who also don't bill themselves as all-boys bands. And
even though people do tend to, I think, draw a conclusion and identify us by the fact that we're women, tell people that's not the way we think of ourselves. We think of ourselves as just a band.
We write songs about all sorts of things, but a lot of them have to do with being women and how we feel about it and how we feel about what's happening to other women in the country. And
what has happened to us in the past and in the present, too.
Right. One of the things that happens sometimes is people use misnomers.
People have referred to People have referred to us as chickens.
Chickens, imagine that.
And as if a chicken could play the guitar.
It's right. Really amazing.
A chicken cannot play the guitar.
No, I've never seen it. No, they have.
I've never seen a chicken do anything but rudimentary percussion.
No, they have unpleasant singing voices.
And they can dance. Some chickens can dance.
Some chickens can dance. That's true.
Their little wings just aren't meant for fretting.
No.
That's true.
This is
a song.
It may not be all their fault. I mean, there aren't any real instruments that are designed for chickens.
That's also true. There is a song that a lot of people think of as kind of our theme song. It's called High Flying Woman.
Did you ever think that you lived in a cage? Did you ever think that you lived in a cage? Well, they're calling you a chick, and the name just seems to stick, and you still don't think you're living in a cage. Take
That song was called Coming Through and was from their second album called F&W, which stood for Funky and Western. And that was a good description of their style, although RCA didn't really know how to promote them. They were just too country to be the pop act the label wanted. I've got a piece of one more by them for you, and it was recorded as a joke. A joke that became their only charting record, making it to Billboard number 79 in 1976. The TV show Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman was popular at the time, and they did a disco version of its theme song. But there's a lot more to their history, so I encourage you to visit their fascinating website at www.thedeadlynightshade.net. And now I'm very pleased to bring you a lot more about the band Wicked Lady. You already heard at the start of the show a taste of their song, Girls Love Girls, and it was what inspired me to track down the founder of the band, Sue Exley, for a special interview. Sue is from the UK, but now lives in Spain. This is some pretty cool history. She was the founder of an all-lesbian rock band around 1974, one of the first in Europe. As I said, the band was called Wicked Lady, and while they formed it in the UK, they moved to Holland for wider freedom to do the rock music they loved. They became quite popular performing all over the continent and releasing three singles between 1979 and 1981 when the band split. Now, it may take you a few moments to get accustomed to Sue's accent, but if you need help, all my interviews are transcribed on my site. I began the interview with the basics, asking how the band Wicked Lady got started.
That was over in England, in a place called Morecambe, which is by the sea, and we started just as a three-piece, just playing pubs and things like that.
How was the name picked for the band?
Well, I picked that because everybody used to say, oh, you're very naughty girls, you girls get up to all kinds, you're very naughty. I thought, well, what's another word for naughty? I thought, wicked. Yeah, that's a good name for a band.
Why did the band move to the Netherlands?
Because over in England, they kept sending us over to Germany, over to Spain, over to Holland, over to Belgium, back into England, catch the ferry, back on the circuit in the continent. And I was having more fun in Holland than what we ever had in England, because we started a bit of a rock band, whereas over in England, we had to be cabaret and girly-girly.
Well, the type of music was going to be my next question. Would you describe the band as rock?
That's how we ended up, yes. It started from a cabaret into a pop, into getting more heavier, into a bit of punk, new wave, and then it started to even out from new wave into rock.
Yeah, I would agree with that from what I've heard. This was an all-female band. Was this unusual in the UK and Europe at that time?
There wasn't many bands like us because we played all our own instruments. There was plenty of girly bands that just sang with microphones or maybe one keyboard player, but we were the ones that actually everybody played an instrument.
So the band lasted roughly from, I think, 74 to 81. And I understand all the members were lesbian. Was the band known to the public as an all-lesbian band?
Yes, I would say that.
So as far as lesbian bands that recorded, I do know there was one, the Flying Lesbians in Germany, but I can't think of any others. Can you?
No, I don't think so neither. I think we got more publicity when we came out of the closet by doing Girls Love Girls and doing a kissing routine on stage. But halfway through the number, then we all kissed. Well, that sent shivers down everybody's backs. And that was even in Holland. But it was all right to do it in Holland, but we were doing it for the military bases with all the guys. So that part of it didn't go down too well.
I want to do it in order. Tell me about the first single, Underneath the Neon Tonight.
That was really a load of rubbish. That was our first single in Holland. But what they did in those days, they played in one key, and then they used to speed it up a little bit. Well, I sound like Mickey Mouse. So I wasn't very happy about that. So they said, oh, well, it won't be like that on the record. We'll have it right. Well, of course, when the record came out, they didn't do it right. I still sounded like Mickey Mouse. So that was a load of rubbish. Because on the B-side, it was called Mamalito. Apparently, in Italy, it came underneath some other record label, and everybody thought it was wonderful over there. But in Holland, it didn't do nothing.
Mamalito has kind of an ABBA feel to it.
Yeah, it's Mamalito. It's a bit, you know, slushy. Something else, that was.
I've seen two different picture sleeves for that single, and one had you all wearing silver outfits with fringe, and the other was white long sleeve shirts and short shorts and neckties and silver boots. What were you going for an image?
Well, we started off as, you know, all dressing exactly the same, but then the heart of the rock, the tassels, you know, got left behind, the sequins got left behind, and then in came, you know, the leather trousers, the leather jackets, the big butch look, don't smile, look mean. From cabaret to hard rock within about 3 or 4 months.
Before we get to the harder rock music, let's hear that first single from 1978 called Underneath the Neon Light and its flip side, Mamalito.
Yeah.
for the very next single, it was All Leather.
Yes, that's right.
And that was my favorite single. That was in 79. I want to hear about Girls Love Girls.
Oh, that one, Girls Love Girls and Boys. That was written by a friend of ours. He wanted us to do it. You know, you're all gay and everything else, so you've got to do this. Of course, we had all the gay supporters, you know, no problem. But then we got a lot of bad publicity because of the military stuff. They weren't too keen about it, but it was too late then. The single was out, and we had, you know, all the gays on our side, so we really didn't care if the military didn't like it. Mind you, we did stop getting a lot of bookings.
You keep mentioning the military. Were you playing lots of events for the military?
Yes, it was for the all the Dutch military, all their bases, and the Americans' army camps, and the British, all the bases that we were doing. Well, because of Girls Love Girls, they didn't really particularly want that, of course, because it's military. So we were dropping most of all our military gigs, which was a shame, because we were doing them regular once a month, and we had a good name. But as soon as Girls Love Girls came out, well, that was a different story. But what we lost on the military bases wasn't bad, because then we started doing the big rock concerts. So we were doing more rock concerts, which we were more happy about, so we didn't have to leave, you know, two separate lives, and don't do that song, and don't do that one, because we're doing a military base tonight, so we could do what we wanted in the rock gigs.
So, in addition to losing gigs, did you experience other homophobia because of that record?
No, not really. Everybody else was fine about it.
And here's the song we've been talking about from 1979, Wicked Lady and Girls Love Girls.
Thank you.
The flip side of that song was Daddy's Little Rich Girl.
Yeah, I wrote that ages and ages and ages ago. There's a song that was written for my thoughts and feelings.
And the third and last single was 1981, Plastic Queen. Again, we're all in leather on the motorcycle on that one. A Plastic Queen had a saxophone solo, and I was surprised at that. That was unusual.
Yeah, they wanted to do a saxophone. I said, but how are we going to do this live? And so I ended up doing the solo, and it goes, and I was playing that double notes on the guitar, trying to play a part of a saxophone. And I don't read music, you see, so everything is in my head.
Bye.
So that was the third single, and the flip side of that one was Play the Game.
Yeah, I wrote that one. Play the game, play the game. But, you know, we're all insane. We were working very, very hard, and I was going through a really bad patch because I was tired all the time. And in the end, it was just a game to me. It was just get on with it, do it. I know you can do it. So I think I wrote that one for my own personal feelings. If I don't experience things, I don't think I could ever write music.
I understand one of the songs the band covered was a Jimi Hendrix version of Hey Joe.
That's right, yeah. It all started in Germany, and the drummer at the time, a blonde girl with very long blonde hair, and she was a Led Zeppelin fan, and Jimi Hendrix, she says, why don't you play it with your teeth? I said, you've got to be joking. She said, no, give a go. And I just put it onto my teeth, and at first I couldn't do it, whatever. Anyway, I mastered it in the end. Well, of course, that went down the bomb. And every time we used to do it, as soon as they knew it was the end of the show, they'd be shouting, hey, Joe, hey, Joe,
right.
Hey, Joe. They were waiting for it.
Which of your singles was the most popular?
Which of the singles? I would say Girls Love Girls, actually. I think that caused more of a smack.
In not counting losing the military gigs, how did your audience change over those 3 years?
Very, very good. Everywhere we went, we always came to full houses. There was always, you know, every concert that we did, we had a lot of support.
Well, even with a lot of support, the dynamics of a band do not always go smoothly. After a very successful concert in Berlin, they were invited to record 3 songs in a studio there, and there were plans to do an album. Ironically, it went so well that one of the members, as Sue told me, got a big head and decided to go solo. The drummer, Jan, went with her, and the band fell apart. Of those 3 songs, one called Standing in the Road was a cover of a song by a band named Blackfoot Sue. And the other 2 songs Sue wrote with the rhythm guitar player Sally Dole. They were Put Some Money in Your Pocket and I Know Where You Run To. They have never been released, so I'm delighted that Sue sent them to me for this show.
Of those 3 songs, which did you like the best?
I like standing in the road. I like, I know where you run to when you run, because I do a nice mean guitar solo right on the end.
Try again now.
Okay, the band split in 81, and you continued as a solo act for a while called Only
yes.
Sue.
That's right.
And then you went on to Spain, and you decided to stay.
Yeah, I was going to go to Spain for 1 year, and then I was going to go on to Portugal to see what Portugal was all about. So I bussed all the way down from Holland. I bought a big camper, American camper van, and off I went. And then I met this girl that I knew from ages and ages and ages ago over when I was a little wicked lady doing the cabaret circuit. And we had a relationship, and we lasted 23 years.
And that act was called Gypsy.
That's right.
What kind of music did Gypsy do?
It was country.
That was a big change.
I never played country before, never. It worked out okay.
Well, you sent me a couple of those songs. One was called Moving On.
I wrote that one. I wrote that in a car park, wanted to move over to Portugal. And I wrote that in the car park, just sitting outside my van.
What year was that from, roughly?
It was 82.
Okay, that was pretty right away then.
Yes, yeah.
You told me that duo lasted 23 years.
23 years we were together, yes.
And I understand the act was pretty popular in Spain.
Oh, yes, it was. We did very, very well. Within the first 2 or 3 years, we were doing very well. And we did the Entertainer of the Year. We were doing the television. We were doing radio stuff. We were doing all kinds. And we were working 7 nights of the week.
That's pretty popular.
Yeah.
This is J.D. Doyle winding down this segment of QMH and reminding you that there are more parts to this show on my site. I thank you for listening, and I especially thank Sue Exley for the interview and for providing me with the unreleased recordings and photos from her scrapbook you can see at my website. Again, that's at queermusicheritage.com. The band Gypsy did not release any recordings, but I want to close with a track by them Sue sent me, which seemed to fit her career, called Moving On.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning, starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Hi, I'm Joseph Mitchell from the Sharpstown High School Broadcaster Program. KPFT's own Pacifica Radio Archives is asking for KPFT listeners to help with an urgent preservation project. The archives are looking for copies of historical KPFT folio program guides.
The fabulous Internet Archives have agreed to donate scanning and online access services to Pacifica, and now it's our shot to save the KPFT history.
If you have folios, mail them here to the station. Drop them off or send them to the Pacifica Radio Archives in Los Angeles. Go to PacificaRadioArchives.org to get the address.
Soon, our history will be available for the world to access. I'm Sam Gonzalez from the Sharpstown High School Broadcasting Program.
This is KPFT Houston.
KPFT's Summer Sizzle membership campaign is coming, and we need you to make it a success. The following trainings are scheduled for July. Please consider attending. Monday, July 25th, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, July 26th, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Wednesday, July 27th, 10 to 11 a.m. and 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Sunday, July 31st, 6 to 7 p.m. All trainings will be held at KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard, near downtown Houston. Visit kpft.org for a complete phone volunteer training schedule. KPFT, Houston.